talking with Ralph Ring and Marcia. This is a subject that is really interesting when you start reading about it, and I hope you will take a look at Otis T. Carr. Go to Ralph's site. You'll see a lot of very interesting information. Did you know Carr for the rest of his life, or did you phase out of it and go into other things when he went on to his that whole amusement patent and the device for the, what was it, Frontier Village or something?
What happened, we were asked to shut down and never to come in each other's contact, no contact at all, no phone, no...
Who asked that? Was that a court order?
That came in and shut us down. They read a piece of paper to him that and we were to stop.
These are government people?
Yes, government people. Two truckloads of soldiers with guns showed up. And then
my. Now, at the time, you're working with Carr. You had a facility. You were constructing. What were you working on? The 45-foot craft? The 6-foot prototype? What was it?
Oh, we had all kinds of craft. We had little ones. We were flying around the Apple. You know, what is that? San Fernando Valley? No.
Yes. The valley in L.A. is the San Fernando. Then you got the San Joaquin and the Sacramento Valley up in the Central Valley.
San Bernardino.
Okay.
San Bernardino.
Yeah.
And, in fact, James Gillihan, who's up in Washington State, when he was a little boy, he saw us. He saw our craft flying around. And people in those days thought they were flying saucers. They were, because it would create a corona. There's a magnetic, when you're interfering with the coming back into full view, there's a corona around the periphery of the craft, and you mm-hmm. could see it, and people mm-hmm. were thinking these were flying saucers. And James was there, and then a couple of police officers saw us with a 45-foot craft, and James apparently saw us from that point of view, too. On one of his talk shows, he talked about it, where he saw us get out of the ship. And
did you? Okay, now, that was that the OTC X1?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's 45 feet. Now,
yes.
You and Otis Carr went up in that ship, is that correct?
No, Otis Carr stayed on the ground in command center.
Okay, and you were in the craft?
Yes.
You have to tell us this story, Ralph. This is very interesting.
Yeah, I was going to graduate to it, but then
okay,
the
no, go
time,
ahead. No, you take your time. I this is building beautifully, so please.
Okay.
Go back, see. And we'll let. I'll wait. This is good.
Okay. Well, we're going back to Carr, and some of the things we explored was the difference of implosion, because explosion is a force that's lethal and hostile to the laws of nature.
Indeed.
But implosion is a natural counterforce of the organic synthesis, which is a negative form of quality. The organic vacuum, as Carr put it. And
imploding is like... What, like a black hole in the universe?
It's a vacuum. It's what they call a vacuum. It's like the center of a vortex is a vacuum. And I've often, people say, well, how did you get where you are, and how do you get there? And I hear all the talks. And I tell them, if they want a quick mini-fix example, take a gallon of water, a full gallon of water, and have two of you, have two people take a gallon of water in a big sink and put up a wager, like you're going to have to cook if I can beat you, mm-hmm. or something like that. Anyhow, mm-hmm. a little mm-hmm. competitive edge. And then they say go, and the one guy pours water out just like we all do, just waiting for it to glug, glug, glug its way down. And the other guy understands vortex mechanics and puts it into a spin.
Spins it down the drain.
The vortex and the center down through the center is a vacuum. And the water is being sucked out. It's not being poured out.
Kind of like a hurricane in a way.
Yeah. And the water comes out like five times faster.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those are some of the things that are important when you, you know, especially if you're trying to save time on a job or something, and you have to know those little secrets to make it easy.
Oh, there's so many shortcuts that we don't know. We're not supposed to know. They don't tell us. I'm still hung up on the statement that Tesla, maybe it was metaphorically given, it doesn't matter, told Carr, you have an open mind, and I'm going to do my best to fill it. I like that.
Yeah.
That's a very good thing. And I like to think of our audience that way, and I'm a conduit for as much as I can possibly put through this program format into the open mind. And we have a wonderful group of people out there. They'll listen to anything. They're not judgmental. They'll open and consider all the time. Anyway, go ahead, please.
Well, so we got into some incredible conversations, and the bottom line was, remember who you are. Like, don't lose yourself in your thoughts. who you are is who you know yourself to be. That's what is it, Shakespeare, to thy own self be true, or know yourself. Or,
right,
I don't
right.
know.
Yeah, no,
anyway,
you're close, yeah.
And he,
to thy own self be true, something like that.
Yeah. He says, you know, the distractions are enormous, and they're you're calling for the distractions so you can become stronger. It's really an exercise in motion, and we don't realize it, so we call it suffering sometimes. Just by our words, mm-hmm. we say, I'm suffering, and your subconscious goes to work and say, well, you said it, buddy, so you don't try to do anything else until you release it, because that's the same as can or can't. Once you say can't, I'll bet $100 that once it's been programmed as can't, a person can't go any further till they release that by saying can or
right.
I'm kidding or X or whatever.
Right. I you know, my whole life I've always felt that the word can't, that doesn't apply to me. Whatever, I just really believe that people are conditioned to sell themselves out, not short, sell themselves out. They cannot do anything. They're doomed to fill whatever role society decides to kick their way. If you can only look at life like, there's really nothing, I, physical limitations aside, there's nothing I can't do.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter IQ. It matters drive, devotion, a ferocity of commitment, an open mind above all, and you'll succeed anyway.
And arriving at a destination of knowing instead of just believing.
Exactly.
The system have us believing in stuff that's not true, that's so far from truth, it's not even funny. And belief systems have a habit of repeating themselves. They go around the Ferris wheel a few times, and then it repeats and repeats in different ways, different terminology, different situations, but it's always repeating until people finally realize they're not getting anywhere, and they go into experiencing things themselves instead of taking somebody's word for something. And then they get into experiences, and an experience teaches you. And once you're taught, you know, oh, I know I'm hungry, or I know I'm thirsty, or whatever, I have to go to the bathroom. Those are absolute natural law in a state of knowing. Compared to, well, I believe now I don't even get hungry, and, well, maybe you will, but there's no experience there. It's blowing smoke through your ears because it doesn't work.
Very nice. Very good. Okay.
So we decided, many, 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 God, I could go on and on with what he got from Tesla, because it's we're living in a big bubble, a hologram, or a big bubble, and metaphorically, I'm calling it a dream. That we're in the dream, we're in reflected light. Now, this is science. We're in a small little sliver of light that doesn't amount to hardly anything, and it's like cracking a door open 100 miles away and trying to just from the crack see what's between you and the door, and you can't do it because we're living in a small sliver of light, just enough to be able to see the reflection. And Carr, you know, kept reminding all of us when we were working, you know, remember who you are, what you're doing, who you are, and what you are. And we constantly kept what he was calling consciousness, kept our consciousness alive and well. And be conscious of everything you do. When I was a machinist when I was a kid, so uh-huh. I did a little machining there. And as I was machining, I had to make sure that it was exactly right before I punched the button or before I did anything. In other words, I had to see it in my mind, and I had to come to a point of, I know that's the best I can do, and then push the button. Because if I didn't take that time to try and know it, if I was guessing, well, that's close enough, then maybe a $5,000 part would be ruined in a matter of seconds.
Well, I've always hated that, too. It's close enough. Close enough doesn't cut it.
No,
whatever you're doing, you do it to the absolute best of your ability.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean you have to sweat and strain, because that's not the way you really get there. You got to release it all and let it happen and just know that you're propelling yourself. You're committed to your fullest, and it'll flow in the right direction. If you can get all the noise shut out, these things can happen.
Yes.
It's not New Age mumbo jumbo. It's just a clarity of purpose.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Would you say, honey?
Yes, I definitely agree with that. It's clarity of purpose.
Clarity of purpose. I like that.
It has nothing to do with New Age. It is what it is.
Right.
And
well,
in
these are,
science,
go ahead.
You know that in science, one right. of the things I try to get across to the audience is, you know, that I had an electron microscope experience when I worked for Advanced Kinetics. A friend of mine was running the microscope, and we were always talking science and advanced science because we were working on lasers levitation, and I was working on magnetic energy there. But he invited me over for lunch one day, and he said, here, I've rigged this up, put your finger in here. He says, let's take a good look at your finger. And I said, yeah, here it is. So see it. Now put it in here and look in here. And I didn't see my finger. It was all, there's nothing there. He says, that's right. There's nothing there. You just think it is. And you, by your thoughts, you are holding a conception in nanoseconds that keeps us images, all of it, together.
And this
and he blew me away.
Who was this talking to you? Was this Carr? Somebody else?
We had an electron microscope, and he was the operator. He was the scientist in charge of that. And he says, no, energy is forever. It cannot be created or destroyed. We are energy. We're not a body. We are energy. We are experiencing life in what we call a body. It's a water vessel, and it's a machine that's perfectly equipped to give you life forever if you don't abuse it. but usually the course of life 101 on planet Earth is, well, less than 100 years, so, and then things get wearing out and cells go to sleep and so forth.
Right.
So I forgot what we were talking about.
You talked about you were getting into the electron microscope. We went through that.
Yeah, and then Carr said, well, if you're energy and this is the thing he's explaining about teleportation, that you don't accelerate with a firecracker. And an example that we use now occasionally is if I wanted to go, if Marcia and I wanted to go to China for Chinese dinner,
uh-huh.
and we wanted to hire a rocket, and we were rich, we didn't have to worry. They said, well, that'll be about $10 million to get you there, because of the time and the setting up and just the fuel alone is probably a couple of million. I don't know. But you've got to go 7,000 miles with this thing and find a way to set it back down safely, then get in a taxi and go to your restaurant. And Carr explained, and we do now, that in our craft, you merely raise up over the top of the Earth, which is already spinning at 1,000 miles an hour, and you wait 7 minutes, and you're already over China. So then you come down quite safely, right over the restaurant, mm-hmm. or down by the restaurant, and go back the same way. Let nature do all the work. You don't have to do anything but understand the laws of nature.
So just position yourself and let the world roll by, so to speak.
Hey, good one. I like that, Jeff.
You flow with the energy.
Yeah, flow with the energy.
That's really good. Very good.
We got together. The end shot was that he said, let's go to work. They've got the understanding group called us and said, we've located a building, and we've had some help from KBLA or something in Los Hollywood or something.
The TV station or radio?
Yeah, I think it was a KB. I don't know.
TV would be KTLA. That's Channel 5 in LA.
Okay. Well, at that time, there was a lot of stuff going on in different areas, and the people we were communicating with were quite intent on seeing that we could help change the way people look at things. Because if you are set in a mindset and look at something that you've been told exists that way,
right,
and it may not really be that way, you've missed completely the reality of the experience, because you're misinforming yourself by accepting the fact that it may not really appear to be what you think it is. And that goes into the thought processes of Carr explaining to us that we think our way through this experience called life on Earth, that the silent part of who the I, me, myself, and I, the silent part of the I is watching everything going on. It's an observer, and seeing how well the me can get through the maze of the hallway to the other classroom without being distracted, deflected, or terminated.
Uh-huh.
And
now this, the when reading the cursory entries online about Otis T. Carr, and for those of you who are doing that, be prepared to find yourself confronted with some negativity, charges of fraud, charges of him being a charlatan, he did jail time, blah, blah, blah. But keep in mind always that the system, when it finds someone who can be a, quote, threat to it, very easily takes care of that person, marginalizes them, smears them, taints them, and they're that's forever who they will be. But that's not who they were. Anyway, go ahead. I just want to make that clear.
Thank you. Very well. Thank you, Jeff. That was a good explanation of what I was trying to get to, that things are not what they seem. Raising the consciousness is part of what Marcia and I do, and she's very good at it nowadays. But is the difference of starting them with word sculpturing, how you pronounce your words, and when and where you pronounce them, and just changing them. I think the experience that Marcia gave to a class or a group, we do workshops, and I think it was something like, okay, class, look at this and tell me what you see. And I forget now, they had all kinds of ideas, and none of them was the same idea. But they all had a negative or a positive connotation to it. And she said, well, you didn't say wrong, but you said, no, you're, let me enlighten you. What you're observing is just what it is. You are labeling it with your definition. You are putting an adjective on it. And so it is to you that adjective. But in reality, there's only one thing you're looking at, and it is what it is until you define it. And if you keep that in mind when you're progressing through life, you won't get distracted into the sidelines that can lead you by thinking it's this and thinking it's that.
That's all. It's called, we make judgments. Everything is judged, evaluated, labeled. Judgmentalism, sure, that's how we get through life. That's how we're taught to get through life anyhow. We're not given the other option, which is to be non-judgmental and just observe and move ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the lifeline. You're a good rescuer, Jeff. You really come in at the right moment. Thank you.
Oh,
well, we decided, he said, to... whatever we have to do to wake people up, and what would be the best thing right now to wake people up? I'm metaphoring here, of course, but how about they've got the fastest cars in the world, they've got the best looking cars in the world, and they've got the best looking boats and the best looking planes, but they're not going anywhere with them. They're just kind of stagnating and polluting and costing a lot of maintenance and repairs. Why don't we build them a spaceship and use magnetic energy to build the ship and then propel, if you want to use that word, it really isn't a viable word with when you're using magnetism, but use magnetic power to traverse anywhere you want free, because we are breathing magnetic power. Every time we take a breath, we could operate this planet for probably 5 years on free energy. There's that much in magnetic energy that can be used, and you'd never run out of fuel. You could go to the end of the, if there is an end, you could go anywhere you wanted and come back without worrying about fuel. So what we want to do is let's shoot for that. And we're going to get some help. And we all kind of knew it, because we were working in a realm where we were out on the edge searching, and we were taking risks, and we were praying in a semi-scientific way to be able to do it without a lot of mistakes, because we had a payroll that was mostly out of our pockets. We were doing a lot of this stuff voluntarily, and we had to get a prototype working so that we could get a manufacturer incorporated and get this thing to work. And he said, we can use this as an example. It's like... it's almost like a movie that they made, I think, in the 50s or 60s, called, what was that movie? The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Sure. One of the most important films ever, 1951. Robert Wise directed it, and
wow,
you're so right. Yeah.
Well,
the big lesson in that film.
Yes. And that tied in with the many, many craft that were spotted and photographed over the White House in those days. You know, that, I mean...
Right. Those came in 1952.
52. Thank you.
Same time. The whole 1950s era was, as you know, with Van Tassel and all the other Adamski, the contactees, We didn't talk about abductions for those people. They were contactees. It was a different group visiting here, or groups. And it was a different ethos, the whole thing.
Yeah, well, so he wanted to, you know, say, he was saying, well, that would be the quickest way if they saw something that was just out of their reach.
Mm-hmm.
You don't give something to somebody. I learned that with my kids. I gave them stuff till I was broke, and they wanted more. Until I said no more, and got put on the blacklist with them.
But that's sad, and you did. I'm sure you did the best you could to raise them properly. That value system, you would never teach a child. That's the antithesis of what you want. And that obviously came from peers. It came from the media. It wasn't you. That's discouraging.
Yeah. Well, I found out that if you want to give them the information just barely beyond their reach and let them reach for it, because
sure,
then they will experience it, not hear it from you and do it your way.
Right.
They have to do it their way.
Right.
And Carr said, oh, we got to always keep that in mind. Don't over give them the whole carrot or the whole apple. I don't know what he said, but just give them a good taste of it and let them find it themselves, because then they'll experience it and they'll never forget it.
Where were you working at this time? Was this San Bernardino, or where was Carr set up? Where was this going on?
Coincidentally, we were at Lake Arrowhead, and the backside of the hill comes into Apple Valley and Hesperia.
Right.
And Understanding called. The people from Understanding called and said, "We have a plant for you. It just showed up, and you can go down. It's a huge plant. It's like a big blimp hangar, but it was a fully equipped facility with machine shop facilities and offices and
down off the mountain in the desert.
Beg your pardon?
Was this down off the mountain in Apple Valley?
Down in Hesperia.
In Hesperia.
Apple Valley, yes.
Yeah, this group is very interesting. Are they still around? Do you know?
Well, I wish they were, because I could have called. I don't need a backup now, but because I've got people like James Gilligan, and I've got lots and lots of witnesses now. But I wish they were, because they could have joined me in this effort to wake people up, because I seem to be the only one that has come out of the cave to talk about it. So they've all disappeared somehow.
Hmm. Well, you're doing a marvelous job, so let's keep going.
Right.
Yeah. All right, so you got the big plant, the big building, and you moved down there from Arrowhead, and that lasted how many years approximately?
Oh, we were expediently moving forward very, very quickly.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we were doing in weeks what would take months and months to do.
Did you?
Because we're working on a different principle. We were working on the natural laws, which incorporate geometry, sacred geometry, in a way that ties in with a different way of perceiving things and synergizing with things. If you don't synergize with the laws of nature, the lines of nature, even when you're building something, if it doesn't feel good, change it until it does, because that's the only way it's going to really work or last for any amount of time.
You were flying things that you were building, correct?
Well, yeah, flying, you can't use the word flying with these. They were operational.
All right.
They worked in the remember the bubble of the bumblebee? They worked
in
the magnetic bubble.
Of course. They were, as we say, airborne.
Yes, okay.
Now, do you remember any visitors to the facility that would have been unusual, secretive, government-ish, black ops kind of people? I'm sure you were watched. Everything you were doing was probably being watched. You may have even had a mole working in the facility.
That could be, although I've never felt that at all. But we did have, thank you for asking, but I'll bring up another something for the public to ponder. There were beings that were showing up just intermittently, and just beautiful people. I mean, they were just kind and polite and just kind of passing by to say hello in a
sense.
They
looked just like us, Ralph?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you couldn't tell. I didn't think they were any different. But when I traced all the way back to this radio program that came up, and it's on the website now called the Galaxy Programs, and they were channeled by a person called Richard Miller.
And Richard Allen Miller, Dr. Miller?
No, oh. different one.
All right.
But I had sent some out for people, but then I decided, well, it's time to bring these out on the website, so people are quite free to download them, listen to them. They're talks from beings from other planes and other frames of reference, other mm-hmm. dimensions, other mm-hmm. other concepts.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just delivering little truths. That's all. Nothing but truth. Just listen and make up your own mind of how and when and why and what. But there was a series that went on, and we felt that we were being visited by people that were connected with this radio program, Galaxy. And it was very helpful, because when they left, God, we'd feel like we'd slept for 10 hours. We felt really invigorated, because their presence, there was nothing but love and friendship in their conversation. And it didn't last but 5 minutes sometimes. And then the mysterious part was, we looked out to see how I got there, because we were wondering, and they had disappeared. There was no sign of them anywhere. So they, wherever they came from.
In other words, they walked in the facility, and then when they left, you went out looking for them just to see, and there was nothing to see.
Nothing
they were just gone.
Mm-hmm. Right, and we checked around the periphery curious, or we were looking for footsteps or something, but there was nothing. And it was from there to the road, it was, I guess, 100 yards. And there was no vehicle, there was nothing.
Got
it.
Yeah. All right. Well, so you were being watched and monitored, certainly somehow.
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
And they very much wanted to see this succeed too, because mm-hmm. if it had, people wouldn't be falling for the idea that things of an unusual nature do exist, and seek for the truth of it, instead of being told no, that can't exist by the dwarfed, mm-hmm. stunted mentality of the science that has been,
right.
until quantum science has come, was the case. They'd say no. They closed the patent office at one time, and they said, no, we've already been there, we've done that, and they don't search any further. But as I found out at Advanced Kinetics, they don't want you to search any further, because there's no money if you find that you can produce free and abundant energy from your own home grounds, your own garage, your own machine shop. And that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to eventually give the ideas of spaceships away. And then the operating principles is with consciousness, instead of, working no ignition switch, no steering wheel. It's just all run by what's called synergization. But I can't pronounce it. Synergizing.
Yeah, you got it.
With what you're building. A good carpenter will, and I've seen good carpenters work with good wood. They they praise the wood and they touch the wood and they become a part of this wood,
right.
Especially cabinet makers. And they become one with the wood and say, you know, oh, this is a beautiful piece and it cost me a fortune, but I got to throw it out. It's not the right one. So you synergize, and that's the way things become beautiful.
As you know, it is said that some of our visitors actually fly craft that are, I'm going to use the expression, tailor-made for the pilot, to synergize with the pilot, or vice versa. The pilot is trained to work with the craft. There's supposed to be some intuitive bond between machine and operator. And I've heard this for years. I can't prove it, but it makes sense, certainly vis-a-vis what you're saying.
Yeah, well, I can't remember the name of the craft, but I think it was the F-58, I don't know what it was. No, I don't remember that. In fact, wasn't there a movie made where it was all commands were made by prop? I mean, he was, you know, go left, go up, go down, go around. And I think they made a movie of that, because I remember seeing it somewhere. Was it Firefox or Foxfire or something? I don't remember.
There's a college that actually is putting...
Oh, thank you.
Yes, there's a college that's actually doing this kind of a thing for the people, for people that are not mentally...
They're doing it it's under the guise of doing it for medical reasons, for the paraplegics and the quadriplegics. They can't, their life is very, very limited. So, and this is for you and your audience, it's the University of Minnesota.
Yes, yes.
University of Minnesota, you can type it in, and it's called, oh God, what is it, honey? What is it? Oh my gosh, I gotta get it. Mind Over Mechanics.
That's it.
Mind Over Mechanics.
Okay. All right, well, they're doing an awful lot of work in that field now, especially for people who are paralyzed physically.
And these are little levitating spaceships. They're flying around the gymnasium just with the guy's thoughts.
You can dial it up on YouTube.
Yeah, wow. you can see an actual demonstration on YouTube by dialing that in.
Minnesota. I'll have to do that. I'll look for that.
It's exquisite because it shows the mind in full operation of a vehicle.
At distance. Uh-huh.
Yeah, So anyway, we got to work and started building things, and then we did get to a point where we had working prototypes sufficient enough to invite a manufacturer to take a look, because we were out of pocket. We were at the end of we were guided to get a hold of a manufacturer, because this is a world product, not just an individual thing.
Mm-hmm.
So our PR man, Major Wayne Aho, that joined us he got out of the intelligence and was tired of the military.
All the lies,
secrets.
All the obfuscation, the secrets, all of it. So he was military intelligence. I didn't know that. I've read about him, but I didn't know he was intelligent. That's quite a credential to have. So he walked, and that's why I was thinking that everything you did was watched. Had to be.
Oh yeah, I think so. Yeah, I really know so, because I can't do a dang thing. I can't get a nail straight. But mm-hmm. when I relax and turn it over to the universe, man, the nail's already done before I can even think about putting it in.
Well, remember the time that the three black dressed the men?
Oh yeah, men in black.
Men in black.
Before there was men in black on the screen. This is a home. This is a personal thing that happened to me when I was working for Advanced Kinetics, and the reason I got there was because I was a tinker. I'd go to garage sales and super sales and start building things working around the house that were quite different, you know, working on magnetic energy. And so when I went to work for Advanced Kinetics, I was put on a project that was magnetic, and I found it useless because they were using force, and you can't use force with the laws of nature. You have to allow things to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
You have a yin and a yang, and I think it's a term, or it has to be a full implosion and explosion is out. You have to, I don't know. So,
mm-hmm.
So where was I?
So I was just saying that you had the documents from Germany on Tesla, right?
Yeah, I had sent to U.S. Romania for it cost me quite a lot of money in those days, but a big book of Tesla's patents. It was illegal in the United States. It was about 4 inches.
So you got those from Romania. Now were they available here in the States at all?
No.
Now, this
not
is
at
fascinating
all.
Because when Tesla died in 1943, I think it was, in the New Yorker Hotel, all of his papers that he had with him, and apparently there were a lot, disappeared immediately. The feds went after him and got him, even before they removed his body from the hotel. It was a suite, I guess, and they took them all. No surprise.
Yeah, no surprise.
But you were able to get material that really probably hadn't been seen in decades, many decades.
We had some material from Tesla that the car, you know, he brought with him. He got them directly from Tesla, and they were never seized until this group of soldiers showed up and presented us with a cease and desist order.
This came in Hesperia?
Yes.
They rolled up in a couple of trucks.
I think they're called 10-bys, if I remember when I was in the service, we called them
10-bys. Deuce and a half, whatevers.
Deuce and a half, yeah.
And
they were loaded with soldiers on both sides with rifles. And then up came these black cars. I don't know, God, there must have been a half a dozen of them. And out came these guys with these badges hanging around their neck, FBI, CIA, and I don't know what all they were. And this guy wanted to see car right away, and these other guys were kind of...
What were the soldiers doing, Ralph? Did they get they got out of the trucks. Did they take up positions? What were they doing?
Yeah, they just stood at semi... I guess they were at ease, but they were... They were at the ready in case, I guess, they were needed or something. And so this guy got Mr. Carr there, and he said, we're cease and desist immediately. We're confiscating everything and taking you, and we're taking you in for briefing and blah, blah, blah. And Carr said, we're hobbyists. We're trying to make things work better for people. And he said, well, what you're fooling around with here is construed as a threat to the monetary system, and you could be held responsible on high treason, and we can lock you and everything up forever, and nobody will ever hear about you again. And that's what they said. And so then
were you listening to this?
Yeah,
did they address everyone, so to speak? Were you all pulled outside? And
yeah, we were all of us was outside.
What a horrible thing!
And so they came in with their trucks. They had a low boy, and they got a bunch of trucks in there, and they started hauling everything out. They pulled our plans and stuff out of neatly put away file cabinets, and they took everything. And And then they took us for interrogation and told all of us, in a nutshell, I'll just cover it. They told all of us not ever to communicate, don't ever talk about this again, don't ever try to do this again, because for the rest of your life, you're going to be watched. We're going to watch everything you do.
And being listened to right now.
Yes.
Sure.
But there is, we found, an invisible line between, if you want to use the word division, because that's what the third dimension is a very definite division of a duality.
Mm-hmm.
Forgot what I was going to say.
Well, let me rewind. You were all told never to talk about this. Don't associate with each other anymore. Don't try and do this again. You'll be watched for the rest of your lives.
Yeah.
And they took everything in trucks. It was a low boy. They took the filing cabinets, all the papers. They took Tesla's papers that Otis Carr had. They took it all.
Yeah.
And then you were interrogated.
Right. And so... then they took all of us in separate places and said, don't think about it anymore, because you're going to be watched. Oh, I know what I started to say. There's an invisible line between...
third dimension. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're at that line now. We've been there for quite a few years. We have pods located all around the world. There's hundreds of pods. And the pods are a name we gave for just... curious kids, people, engineers, there's physicists and everything that belong in these, they are in these pods, working diligently to change the system by inventions and ideas that they've come up with in the medical profession, in the economic field, in all fields. And we want to get back to free and abundant energy for everybody, which we're entitled to.
Well, see, you challenged the petroleum industry, and you can't do that. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
That's the kind of power and energy they're using. That's what the world is predicated on, and the kind of energy that you were dealing with. And there are probably many others in similar pursuits that have been told the same thing. Look at Stanley Meyer. They apparently killed Stanley Meyer.
Yes.
And there are many others who have paid the price. They don't have a problem killing people. It's too much at stake in their world, not my world.
Well, we found that we're in a holding pattern because in our pods, we have working devices that are working on natural energy that is non-stopping. It goes on and on and on. Magnetic motors. And we have them ready to produce when the public demands or requests what we've been doing secretly and quietly in the field for years, trying to give to them. We can't cross this invisible line. I've tried to cross it quite a few times, and these men in black show up. That's what the story was back there, honey. When this all happened, three men in black showed up in my house and wanted to know what I was doing, asked if they could come in, and they said they represented the DeWalt School of Electronics, and they wanted to offer me something related to a scholarship, I guess. I don't know, but they came in and got too nosy of what I was doing, and they saw a lot of the devices that weren't conventionally operating. And I saw this guy clicking a little camera, and my wife got really panicky. She says, "I'm going to have you guys to leave right now." And I sensed there was something up too, and I said, "Okay, great." And then my wife got upset, said, "Get all this stuff out of here. I don't care what you do with it, but they could be back and cause a lot of problems." I loaded up my car, and I went. That's when I went down to Van Tassel, down the Integratron down in Joshua Tree, and I had that big book of Tesla's thing, and I pulled into Giant Rock, and at that time Van Tassel was coming out of the restaurant, and it was just kind of magical, like, "Oh, you're here," and "Yes, I am," and he says, "I know," and I said, "This is for you." He says, "I know, I've been waiting for it. I need it for the Integratron," and he says, "I hope you had a good trip, but I don't want you to drive back right away without resting. Go over on that, there's a place called Crystal Hill. Go down and take a rest before you go back." I went and laid down over there, and after I'd been there about 15 or 20 minutes, I saw hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of spaceships hovering above me and coming down low and everything. And later on, I was told that was a thank you for taking the book to Van Tassel.
And he ended up with the book, as far as you know, that's where it. What a prize that would be now.
Well,
all right.
I think now you can get that particular book. I think it's no longer.
Well,
something similar. They probably watered it down. I don't know. But anyway.
Listen, we have to say goodnight this time. Next time, I want to set up the flight you took on the 45-foot craft, and we need to talk about that. Obviously, that happened before the military showed up.
Yeah.
We'll discuss that and whatever else you'd like to talk about. Thank you, Ralph. Thank you, Marcia, very much, both of you, for sharing your evening. And we'll talk soon, and let's carry on.
Thank you, Jeff. What a pleasure and what a blessing.
Yeah, and thank you for all the work you're doing to help people wake up and realize there's more to life than they ever dreamed. Between the cradle and the grave, that's nothing, because there is really no death.
Oh, yes. Indeed. Thank you for that. You're so right. All right. Take care. We'll talk soon.
Okay. Good night.
All right. That's our program, our visit with Ralph. We'll have part three for you pretty soon. Thanks to Frank Chile for helping coordinate this. And we will bid you all good night and wish you a very happy, safe weekend. And we'll be right back Monday. And you know where we'll be in the meantime. So take care. And we'll talk soon.